Hello, welcome to Line by Line Bible Studies. My name is Paul Stringini. We are studying the book of Genesis. We are in chapter 23, verse 1. And Sarah was 120 years old. These were the years of the life of Sarah, 127. And Sarah died in Kirjath Arba, the same is Hebron in the land of Canaan. And Abraham came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. So this place is called Kirjath Arba. And apparently Kirjath Arba is another name for Hebron. And Abraham there came to mourn for Sarah and to weep for her. Verse 3. And Abraham stood up from before his dead and spake unto the sons of Heth, saying, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. Give me a possession of a burying place with you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. It's an interesting wording to me that he says it like that, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And obviously in burying the dead, you're not going to see them anymore. But to bury them out of sight, to reemphasize the fact that, you know, you don't want to dwell on death, right? People don't like to dwell on death. And having the reminders of the dead around constantly can be a barrier to that, especially, you know, a body. And therefore, the idea of burying the dead away from our immediate vicinity and not having to look upon the remembrance of them, it helps with the process of grief. You know, it's natural to go through a grief process where, you know, there's sadness, but then eventually you have to come out of it and go on with life. And one of the important steps in doing that is putting the dead away. Verse 5, And the children of Heth answered Abraham, saying unto him, Now who these children of Heth are, I'm not certain, but they are inhabitants of the land of Canaan, around about Hebron at this time. Verse 6, Hear us, my lord, thou art a mighty prince among us. In the choice of our sepulchres, bury thy dead. None of us shall withhold from thee his sepulchre, but that thou mayest bury thy dead. He said, We'll give you any of our sepulchres. You can bury your dead with us. There's a desire among them to sort of assimilate Abraham into their people because he was a very prosperous and wealthy man with flocks and herds and riches. You know, he had men servants and maid servants and etc. Camels and all the rest. Verse 7, And Abraham stood up and bowed himself to the people of the land, even to the children of Heth. And he commanded with them, saying, If it be your mind that I should bury my dead out of my sight, hear me, and entreat for me to Ephron the son of Zohar, that he may give me the cave of Machpelah, which he hath, which is in the end of his field. For as much money as it is worth, he shall give it me for a possession of a burying place amongst you. He wants to own this piece of land. He wants it to be his. He doesn't want to take someone else's sepulcher. But he has a particular place in mind. There's a cave he wants to buy. He wants to bury Sarah there. And so it belongs to this man, Ephron, the son of Zohar. And he wants to buy it. He's saying, okay, if you want to help me out, then please tell him to sell it to me. It's at the end of his field. It's at the edge of his property. Verse 10, And Ephron dwelt among the children of Heth. And Ephron, the Hittite, answered Abraham in the audience of the children of Heth, even all that went in at the gate of his city, saying, Nay, my lord, hear me. The field give I thee, and the cave that is therein. I give it thee, in the presence of the sons of my people, give I it thee. Bury thy dead. So that gives you a clue that perhaps these children of Heth, are they Hittites? The Hittites originated, I believe, from what's modern-day Turkey. Or Asia Minor, in the was called in other times. And as their empire grew, they sort of spread out. And in this period of time in history, there was a lot of interchange between civilizations. You see a lot of peace here. You notice how Abraham was just dwelling among these strangers. There were some, you know, bad dudes earlier on we read about who had come against Sodom, but in general, there's a lot of, you know, cross-cultural exchange between the different peoples. So he is dwelling in the land of Canaan. There might be a significant, influx of Hittites into that area at this time. It is a lucrative place to be at this time. A lot of times people think of Palestine or Israel as being this desert land, and that's because they had an ecological collapse. It used to be much more beautiful. I mean, when it calls it the land flowing with milk and honey in the book of Exodus, it's not kidding. It was a beautiful land. But, as we will eventually read when we get to things, that the people didn't obey the laws. They did not allow the land to enjoy its Sabbaths, the rest. And they exploited the land to the point of destruction. But this man's a Hittite. And perhaps the children of Heth are Hittites. I'm not quite sure. It's not totally clear. It seems a little bit like there is some sort of distinction between Ephron the Hittite and the rest of them, because he is the son of Zohar, as opposed to being a son of Heth. So maybe there is some sort of distinction there. I don't know. It's not really significant, but it's a very straightforward passage. It's going to be a very brief study. And I'm just looking for things, points of interest along the way. So he offers to give the piece of land to Abraham. And then in verse 12, Abraham gives his counteroffer, which is this. And Abraham bowed down himself before the people of the land. And he spake unto Ephron in the audience of the people of that land, saying, But if thou wilt give it, I pray thee, hear me. I will give thee money for the field. Take it of me, and I will bury my dead there. He wants to pay for it. He does not want to be indebted to them, and that is wise. You know, it's funny, what popped into my mind as I'm reading this is the way the Jews came to populate Israel, or what was once known as Palestine. And that comes from the Roman idea, and it wasn't known as Palestine really at any time since the Roman times until the British occupation. But when the Balfour Declaration was made that would establish a homeland there, the place was in utter desolation. There were some people there, some Bedouins, and Jerusalem obviously was a city, a Muslim city. But there were Jews there and Christians there. There always had been a remnant. Even though the Jews were cast out, there's always a few, hanging around. It's never quite possible to drive everyone out. But, it was not a dominated city. They did not possess it. During that time, when the Jews began to move to Israel, a lot of times it's portrayed today like they stole the land. And it all comes down to a concept about land ownership, The land was owned by wealthy Turkish lords or people who were part of the Turkish Empire, the overlords. And the Jews bought the land from them, the ones who had legal title to it. They paid money for it. They didn't just come in and take it. That's how they established the State of Israel. Now, people could talk about what happened in 1967 when they took the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and all that. But that was a defensive war. That was the result of the aggression by the Arabs. The Arabs were aggressive. They invaded Israel, or they attempted to invade them. They were driven out, and Israel took bits of territory, mostly from Jordan and some from Egypt, including things like the Golan Heights, where the Arabs had launched rocket attacks against Israel during the Six-Day War. I believe that was the Six-Day War. And that's also when they retook Jerusalem. But it just reminds me of that, because people always talk about them stealing the land, but what they obtained to make their state in 1948 was they purchased land, and they moved there, and they worked hard. And that's what Abraham does. And yeah, the work is blessed by God. But people, whenever you work and you obtain, and God blesses you, it is so natural that people become jealous. Because for some people, success means you must have stolen something from someone else. The only way you could have success would be by taking it from somebody else. But the question is begged then, why weren't they successful before with that land? Why was it that land was not being productive? It was mostly desert, and the Jews caused the desert to bloom through irrigation and careful cultivation and using modern techniques and bringing a lot of Western technology there. Because, I mean, remember, the Jews are coming from Europe and America and from the developed world for the most part, certainly the first wave. They were nearly communist at the time, too. As far as they were doing a lot of collectivism and stuff like that. And, you know, working together in that way, you know, maybe it can work for a nationality. I don't know. I'm certainly not a collectivist. But Abraham would not be indebted to these people. He wasn't just going to take it from them. And the other half of what I was going to say is when they took the land in the Six-Day War, that was war booty. If you come against me and you bring a weapon against me, I take that weapon from you. That's my weapon. You have no just right to that weapon. So if the Arabs used the Golan Heights to rain rocket attacks down on Israel, and then Israel takes the Golan Heights, why should they ever return that to Syria? They should never return that, ever. Why? It's theirs. They want it. They want it from an aggressor. Land won from an aggressor in that sense, you know, Syria is a big country, but that little bit of territory, that's now belongs to Israel, or it should. I'd never give it up. And why? So they can launch attacks from it again? Give them the high ground? Not wise. These aren't Abraham's enemies, though. But the same principle applies. You know, you should not, I mean, we should not be thieves. And we should not find ourselves indebted to strangers. It is not good to be in debt. It is not good to, you know, something so important to us to have it dependent on the generosity of a stranger. It is tempting to take gifts, but it is better to pay for what we obtain and that it should be ours. Verse 14, and Ephron answered Abraham, saying unto him, my lord, hearken unto me. The land is worth 400 shekels of silver. What is that between me and thee? Bury therefore thy dead. He's saying it's worth 400 shekels of silver. That's not a insubstantial sum, but it's not, you know, just it's not a lot either. You know, there's a cave, there's some trees, it's uncultivated, it's at the edge of his property. He's saying 400 shekels of silver. I don't know what that would be in modern terms, but what would an empty piece of undeveloped land cost? You know. It's not expensive. It's not a big parcel. It's worth something, no doubt. And he said, well, what's that? Bury your dead. You bury your dead there. Don't even worry about it. Verse 16, and Abraham hearkened unto Ephron, and Abraham weighed to Ephron the silver which he had named in the audience of the sons of Heth. Sons of Heth are obviously the dominant people here, and they're the ones who would be able to authoritatively witness this transaction. 400 shekels of silver, current money with the merchant. And that's interesting, I think, because, you know, you can make an agreement with somebody, but if you don't have witnesses, you know, this is before all these people, or if you don't actually give them anything for it, you know, down the road, if you just take charity, what's to stop them from taking it from you? You know, if you don't pay for it, down the road, you may feel hey, that was a gift. You gave it to me. It's like, well, I really need it, you know? But if you pay for it, they've got no claim. That's important. It's important to pay for the things we obtain. If we're taking things on the charity of other people, especially things that are really important to us, that's one thing. Someone, hey, you want to? I'll buy you lunch. I'm not talking about stuff like that. I'm talking about where you bury your dead. Don't give important things in your life over to the hands of strangers. Don't be indebted to strangers. Verse 17. And the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field, and the cave which was therein, and all the trees that were in the field that were in all the borders round about were made sure. So that's kind of like a survey. They plotted out exactly what the boundaries of this purchase would be, in accordance with the law that was current at that time, similar to the law of Hammurabi. And according to my notes, this is exactly in accord with that law, but I don't know. But it sounds like a very legal transaction. There are witnesses. There are actual measurements being made. That is the implication here. And so, verse 18, and unto Abraham for a possession in the presence of the children of Heth, before all that went in at the gate of his city. Meaning all the people who go in at the gate, it means the public. That's like their term for the public. If, you know, whoever goes in at the gate, that is a public place, the entry of the gate. I believe that to be an idiom. Verse 19, and after this, Abraham buried Sarah, his wife, in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, the same as Hebron in the land of Canaan. Verse 20, and the field and that cave that is therein were made sure unto Abraham for a possession of a burying place by the sons of Heth. So the Heth were the ones who made it sure. And it was a transaction between him and Ephron. And it was all very amicably conducted, but wisely also on the part of Abraham. I really don't have anything more to say about this chapter. We will go on with the next chapter next time. This has been Line by Line Bible Studies. My name is Paul Stringini. Thank you for joining me. I look forward to studying with you again very soon. You can find all my studies on oraclesofgod.org, O-R-A-C-L-E-S-O-F-G-O-D.org. Thank you very much.